Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's second quarter 2018 earnings call. Armando Tamez, Nemak's CEO, Alberto Sada, CFO, and Adrian Althoff, Investor Relations Officer, are here this morning to discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you may have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's Investor Relations website. I will now turn the call over to Adrian Althoff.
Thank you, operator. Good morning and welcome, everyone. We very much appreciate your participation. Armando Tamez, our CEO, will lead off today's call by providing an overview of our business and financial highlights. Alberto Sada, our CFO, will then discuss key industry trends and our second quarter financial results in more detail. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Nemak undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Armando Tamez.
Thank you, Adrian. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's second quarter 2018 conference call. We posted good results this quarter on the back of a richer sales mix and operational improvements, but at the same time continue to lay the groundwork for profitable growth in our new structural and electric vehicle component business. Consolidated volumes were up 2.3%, as a better performance among the Detroit 3 automakers in North America more than compensated for lower sales to diesel applications in Europe. In turn, higher volume plus a combination of exchange rate effects and higher aluminum prices supported 6.3% growth in revenues. Moving on to EBITDA, improved volumes and operational performance were key factors. Additionally, we benefited from favorable exchange rate as well as less adverse aluminum price trends. Adjusting for $18 million in non-recurring income we reported in the second quarter of 2017, EBITDA finished up 10% year over year. We had a positive quarter in our operations, bringing new programs across our main business lines to serious production, while at the same time making continuous progress with manufacturing and labor cost reduction initiatives. The main bright spots were Europe and North America, where we successfully capitalized on a more favorable mix of higher value-added products, including cylinder heads, engine blocks, and structural and electric vehicle components. As we mentioned in our earnings release, we also completed customer discussions on new pricing adjustments that will protect us against major aberrations in the aluminum markets. The recent divergence between primary and secondary price references in North America, fueled in part by speculation around potential trade actions, this divergence has been creating a mismatch between the purchase and sale prices associated with a portion of our production in the region, resulting in a headwind for Nemak. This problem is now behind us. With the pricing adjustments we have put in place, we expect that this divergence will have no effect on our results going forward. I would now like to turn to our structural and electric vehicle component business, where we continue to build on existing resources and know-how to capture new opportunities. As we have mentioned in previous conference calls, our technology portfolio represents a key advantage in working with customers in this segment, enabling us to offer tailor-made solutions as opposed to depending on a single approach. Additionally, our engineering and design capabilities, including casting simulation, in-house 3D printing, and production light prototypes, among others, help us to add value in rapid response services from the early concept phase, reducing costs and expediting development and production timelines for our customers. We made good progress in the quarter in this regard, leveraging our expertise in casting and machining to secure two new projects in Europe involving highly integrated EVE motor housing. One, a contract to supply battery electric applications for new premium vehicle lines starting in 2020, and the other, an exclusive collaboration agreement with a new Tier 1 customer. I will also like to highlight recent progress in battery housings, another product line where we see exceptional potential for tapping into our core competencies. During the quarter, I am pleased to share that we started to launch our first program to produce battery housings in North America, through which we will be supplying hybrid vehicles of a premium European OEM. Our ability to provide advanced design and casting cooling solutions, which are critical to crash resistance and battery performance, respectively, have been key to the traction we have gained so far in battery housings. Our sales backlog to date in these components is worth a total of approximately $80 million in annual revenues, or 20% of the estimated total market in plug-in hybrid vehicles in Europe and North America by 2020. Summarizing, our sales and marketing activity from the quarter, we won new contracts worth approximately $150 million in annual revenues, one quarter of which represented incremental business. I would like to conclude by touching on a great honor we received this past April, the General Motors Supplier of the Year Award. Our selection was a reflection of our efforts to exceed customer expectations and add value to their operations. It also marked the 14th time we have won the award, making us one of the 10 most recognized suppliers in its 26-year history, out of GM's more than 20,000 suppliers worldwide. I will now hand off the call to Alberto Sada, NIMAC CFO.
Thank you, Armando, and good morning, everyone. I will start my section by providing an overview of the auto industry performance in our main regions so that you have additional context for our results in the quarter. Regarding North America, U.S. vehicle sales are increased 2% year-on-year, supported by the performance of the U.S. economy. On the other hand, vehicle production showed the 1.7% year-on-year reduction as OEMs continue to follow a destocking strategy. The U.S. consumer has continued to favor light trucks over passenger cars, a trend that has been present for several quarters and has proven positive for some of our customers. Meanwhile, in Europe, vehicle sales are increased 3.9% year-on-year, also supported by more favorable market conditions, particularly in Eastern Europe, while vehicle production figures saw an increase of 5.1% year-on-year as the OEMs have been successful in tapping foreign markets to sell their vehicles. In this region, we continue to see important mix changes associated with growing consumer preference for gasoline over diesel, with gasoline gaining 10 percentage points versus diesel in the last year. NIMAC second quarter 18 volumes were 13.1 million equivalent units, up 2.3% year-on-year, supported by higher sales in North America. In turn, revenues were $1.2 billion, a year-on-year increase of 6.4%, driven by higher aluminum prices, the appreciation of the euro against the U.S. dollar, plus the increase in volume already explained. NIMAC reported consolidated operating income of $135 million, 8.9% higher than the year-ago figure. The main reasons for the increase include higher volumes, as already explained, operational efficiencies, a lower negative impact from metal price lag, together with positive FX effects. Our EBITDA was $207 million, slightly higher than last year, but up 10% year-on-year on a comparable basis, that is, excluding the non-recurring gain reported last year related to a dispute on taxes in Brazil. EBITDA per equivalent unit was $15.8, up from $14.7 last year on the same comparable basis. This gain was mainly driven by the positive effects in operating income that I already described. Net income was affected by non-cash foreign exchange losses associated with the effect of the devaluation of the Mexican peso on our U.S.-denominated debt, coupled with an increase in deferred taxes for the same reason. After this effect, net income amounted to $24 million, a 69% decrease versus last year. Capital expenditures totaled $93 million during the second quarter, as we continue with our investments to support new program launches in all our product lines, as well as increase our efficiency. Now, let me cover our regional results. As mentioned before, the North American auto industry has maintained a historically high level of vehicle sales, while at the same time adjusting production to lower inventories. Nonetheless, our volumes for the region grew on the back of higher demand for our products, in particular from FCA, which has had a good degree of success with the sale of its crossovers and SUVs, including the new Compass and other vehicles of the Jeep line. Our revenues in the North American region were also supported by aluminum prices, showing a 5% year-on-year increase. EBITDA for the quarter was $130 million, 5.7% higher than last year on a comparable basis, after excluding the non-recurring income I described before. On the back of increased sales volumes, a less adverse impact from the metal price lag and operational efficiencies. In Europe, we reported a 2.4% decrease in volumes during the second quarter of 18 due to the reduction in diesel applications, which I just mentioned. We continue to see higher volumes in gasoline engine parts, but this was not sufficient to bridge the entire gap. Despite the above, second quarter 18 EBITDA increased 21% year-on-year as operational efficiencies and foreign exchange gains more than offset lower volumes. Our volumes in the rest of the world were stable in the second quarter, while revenues increased 11.9% due to higher aluminum prices. However, EBITDA decreased by $1 million, as higher volumes in Brazil were not sufficient to offset the impact on profitability of lower volumes in China. It is important to highlight that our operations in South America are in the process of ramping up new business, which we expect will help margins recover in the midterm. With that, I conclude my comments and will now open the call for Q&A. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you. At this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we pull for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you for taking my question. If this is related to the aluminum lag, can you explain how the lag affected less to a lesser extent this time? And regarding the pricing of the aluminum, have you been able to align the formula with customers related to reflecting correctly your cost inputs? Thank you.
Yes. Hi, Vanessa. This is Alberto. Yes, related to your question around metal lag, we saw less metal lag this quarter than what we had last year. In total, it was an effect of about $4 million. And I think, as I was highlighted by Armando on the call, with the adjustment on the prices that we have done, we have no divergence effect whatsoever on the second quarter. So that's fully fixed.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Mauricio Serna with UBS. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Congratulations on the results, and thanks for taking my questions. I would like to talk a little bit more about the pricing adjustment. Just if you could elaborate a little bit more how it works. You know, I recall that, you know, with the metal lag, you have 2-3 months between the estimation of the cost or the price that you would charge your customers for your product. No, I just want to know how you as much as before. And also, if you could maybe provide a little bit more details on the EBITDA improvements, you know, how much came from product mix, how much came from better manufacturing and labor costs. And finally, maybe you can update us on your sales backlog of the whole new businesses, you know, both structural and and the electric vehicles with this new recently awarded contract? Thank you.
Yes, Mauricio. Related to the pricing, let me just remind you how that works. I mean, we have the way we price our products is with a metal formula that updates on average about every 2 months. So the corresponding lag effect that we have when the aluminum obviously goes up represents that lag between our adjusting pricing versus our cost, and it's on average about 2 months. What we have done with our customers is to incorporate into the formulas adjustment mechanisms that help us deal completely with this divergence by incorporating pricing elements out of the primary aluminum market, which was the reason why we had the divergence between our costs and our selling indicators that we had, in particular for our North American operations. So, yeah, let me just add, this is Armando. Related to this issue that we have related to this divergence, I'm glad to share with you that we were able to negotiate with all our North American customers, and they help us improve our formula to really reflect our cost. They supported us, and I'm glad to mention that this effect is retroactive to January 1st. So our customers supported us, and we're very happy with that regard. That's why I mentioned that we do not foresee any issues related to this, since we have incorporated in the new formulas this adjustment on the price that we have mismatch and that we have been communicating to you. Mauricio, related to the structural and electric vehicle component business, I'm also very glad to mention that so far we have booked solid contracts with a lot of premium OEMs as well as mass market OEMs, with contracts worth approximately about $380 million worth in annual revenues. I would like to also give you a little more detail about, out of these 380, approximately 150 are related to electric vehicle components, which 80 million are on battery housings. So this is a segment that we are penetrating very rapidly with our new technology, as I mentioned in my script. This is something that with the technology that we have, we are providing our customers with technology to support cooling, which is, I think, very important for the battery housing. And we have other electric components worth approximately $70 million. And in addition to that, we have already booked business of about $230 million in a structural component business, for a total of $380. I'm also glad to tell you that we have a very solid pipeline of additional quotes, a lot of customers, conventional OEMs, as other Tier 1 customers that are opening the door, plus companies that in the past we didn't do any business, such as battery makers, are already showing a lot of interest in our company. So we have approximately between $500 to $600 million worth of quotes at this moment, and we're confident that we will be gaining additional orders in the near future. And I like to also tell you that we are still firm with our goal of reaching $1 billion by 2022. In the structural and electric vehicle components. And just to complement the response on your second question, Mauricio, related to the EBITDA improvement, when you do the comparison of the year-over-year, excluding the effect of the non-recurrent positive effect we had last year of the tax dispute in Brazil that was favorable for us, we had a $19 million increase, which is comprised about half of that growth effect associated with volume and FX. And the remaining half was about a quarter related to the aluminum lag that we experienced, that even though we experienced it a little bit, it was significantly less than what we had last year. And the other quarter was efficiencies and a few other items, mainly in our European operations.
Great, great. This is all very helpful. Thank you, and congratulations.
Our next question comes from the line of Luis Miranda with Santander Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. Armando Alberto, good morning. My questions are, the first one is related to to North America. I think we have seen a very strong growth during the quarter. I just wanted to know, what do you think could be the normalized growth rate in the short term with the visibility that you have? In my view, this 5.5 seems a little bit on the high side of what you could be sustaining in the medium term. The second point is in Europe. When do you think that we could start to see volume growth resuming with this, and when the gas platforms start to outperform the diesel platforms? I don't know if that's the correct way to see it. And just the final question, just to follow up in the backlog. This 25% of the backlog that you increased of incremental sales, I would guess, from what you mentioned, it's basically related to the traditional business, to engine blocks and head. That's correct? Those are my questions. Thanks.
Yes. thank you, Luis. In North America, we are seeing strong market, even a little bit better than originally expected. I think to some extent is related to the tax reform that was introduced in January 1st of this year in the U.S. that provides the consumers with more the cash for them to buy vehicles. We have seen a strong first semester, and the industry or analysts are projecting that the second semester is going to be strong as well. Actually, the projection of the industry in North America is above 17 million units. In our original budget, we have like about 16.7, 16.8 million units, which I think is shown already in our results. Related, Luis, to your question related to Europe, one of the things that we are seeing after the diesel scandal is the following. We are seeing a significant shift of preference by customers or consumers in Europe switching from diesel to gasoline engines. That has created, over the last 18 months, a drop of diesel penetration of about 10 percentage points. Some of our customers are trying to move as fast as possible to adapt to this new trend. We are also trying to help in that regard. We are, again, building flexibility and also trying to open additional capacity to support this customer shift that was not expected in the first place, either by customers or by ourselves. But we are moving forward with in that regard. We're expecting that the diesel will stabilize most likely in the next maybe 12, 18 months to a level of about 30%, whereas in the past it was about 50-50, the share between diesel and gasoline. So that has created some issues, operational issues for the OEMs as well as for us. We need to move very fast, and our customers are putting a lot of pressure for us to meet some of these new requirements. And related to your last question, I think we agree with your point.
Thank you, Armando. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Luis.
Our next question comes from the line of Juan Tavares with Citigroup. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, everyone. My first question is more on your guidance. I don't know if you've commented already, but I'm curious if you're still holding to the guidance for EBITDA around $700 million. Just because if we look at the first half and the comments you made about still showing some strength in the U.S. into the second half and the readjustments in your pricing contracts, you're annualizing close to $800 million in EBITDA. So I'm curious if there's any reason that you're expecting, if you're still holding to the old guidance, any contraction in margins into the second half. And second, maybe if you can just give us a little bit of details on your taxes for this quarter. I saw that you paid a lot in taxes this quarter. If there's anything specific there, that happened in the quarter or anticipation of some taxes, just to understand what we should expect also for the remaining part of the year. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Juan. I would like to answer the first question related to the guidance. As you are mentioning, certainly we had a good first half of the year. We are confident that we will have a solid second half of the year. And most likely, we will not only meet but exceed our guidance. I think we will be able, Juan, to give you better color in the next conference call. But certainly, we expect that our results will be above our original guidance that was, let's say, created under different conditions. But we have made solid improvements in our operations, as well as volumes are robust and healthy. So we see that, yes, we will have a better year than originally anticipated.
And Juan, related to the questions on taxes, yeah, certainly we saw an extraordinary effect in this quarter, and that was 100% associated with the depreciation of the Mexican peso against the dollar. And since our accounting is in pesos, we need to reflect the corresponding effect that it has on our U.S. denominated debt. I think it's important to mention that this is just an accounting adjustment, both on the foreign exchange losses that you saw on the financial expenses line, as well as the incremental taxes, which is associated with the third taxes that is generated out of this, let's say, accounting adjustment or accounting foreign exchange loss. And remember that our balance of currencies is well positioned. Our U.S. denominated debt is supported by our revenues that we generate and profits that we generate in U.S. dollars, as well as the corresponding euro-denominated debt that we have, which is also, let's say, balanced with our exposure to euro currency business. So all in all, the effect on taxes was extraordinary based on this depreciation. If we see the currency moving the other way, we will see different movements, both in the foreign exchange gain loss line, as well as the corresponding effect on taxes, accounting effect on taxes due to this, the creation of these deferred taxes from this extraordinary loss.
Great,
The cash taxes should not change from what we have seen in previous years, so that should be stable.
Okay, thank you. Very helpful.
Welcome.
Our next question comes from the line of Augusto Enciki with HSBC Global Asset Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking the question. I'm sorry if these have already been asked, but just curious, could you give us a little bit more detail in terms of the revenue that was from structural components and EV in the quarter? And if you could remind me what it was in the first quarter as well to just get a full first half number. And secondly, when we're looking at revenue per unit, I'm wondering why for North America specifically you had it's flat to slightly down on a year-over-year basis. I thought it would be up given aluminum prices, but is that related to the new pricing agreements that you have with the customers? Thank you.
Augusto, let me just answer your first question, and I hope you can help me with the second follow-on. But related to the structural components and EVs business, that is let's say, ramping up according to our plan. And in the quarter, we had a rough estimate of around $40 million worth of revenue associated with that business. We should expect the year to be in the neighborhood of the $150-plus million for structural, and that's in line with our ramp-up of our business to reach the 380 backlog that we have highlighted. You had a second question on revenues. Can you please explain that again?
Sure. I was just looking at, and I know we don't really focus too much on per unit revenue, but when I'm looking at North America 2Q versus 2Q18 versus 2Q17, on a unit revenue basis for North America was down, like, I guess, less than 1%. But I thought it should be trending upwards given price pass through and whatnot.
Yeah, when you see the total revenue figures, I'll have to do the per unit basis to see exactly what moved. That moves a little bit up and down depending on the mix. But all in all, the trend was that when you compare year on year, we see about 60% of the increase in revenue associated with the metal pricing adjustments that we saw and for which we have explained on the lag and divergence that we had in the past. But we'll have to check and get back to you exactly to see what's the corresponding mix effect that may have triggered a little bit adjustment on the on the pricing side. I think it's also important to highlight that when you do the calculation on revenue, you need to adjust it for the $18 million of extraordinary effects we had in Brazil back in 2017, and that may help you bridge a little bit better the movement.
Sure. Thank you for that. And so one more question. You mentioned, I think it was mostly in the last quarter, but additional costs associated with new product launches and such. Is that still in the second quarter, or is that kind of going away as those ramp up?
Augusto, no. This is something that we have been able to correct. We have, as we have already mentioned, improve our efficiencies, not only in terms of labor costs, manufacturing costs, as well as launching expenses. We have extraordinary launching expenses during the first quarter due to many products that we were launching. And in addition, as I was mentioning, we have in Europe as well additional expenses related to working overtime to support some of these shifts that we are seeing from diesel into gasoline. And unfortunately, our customers were not paying for all these additional expenses. So fortunately, we are more stable, and we do not foresee having this issue in the next future.
Great. Thank you very much. That was very helpful.
Thank you, Augusto.
Our next question comes from the line of Alejandro Acar with GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, everyone. Just a quick follow-up regarding your agreement on the aluminum prices. Did you mention that the agreement was retroactive?
Yes, I did mention that, Alejandro, that the agreement was retroactive to January 1st with our main customers in North America. Yes.
And would you explain or give us more color regarding how much would the benefit would be, and in which quarters, or maybe I don't know if you're going to record it in 2018 or 2019?
I think the bottom line is that we have negotiated with our customers to eliminate this effect that we have from this mismatch between primary aluminum and secondary aluminum. And we do not foresee to have this effect going forward. And we reported during the first quarter some impact related to that. Fortunately, we were able to correct that, but we do not foresee. The only element, of course, will be metal lag, in which is a normal part of our business. We are seeing, and I think that is to some extent positive, not only for our customers, but also for us, that the aluminum prices are going down, they are stabilizing, so hopefully we will be able also to recover a portion of what we have already reported on the metal lag.
So just to be clear, so we shouldn't expect a compensation on your previous losses from this effect, right?
Well, it's fully covered for 2018. For 2017, that's sunk.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Gilberto Garcia with Barclays. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. Do you have any comments on Ford's announcement that they will cancel most of their sedan production in North America? How is that going to impact your volumes, your investments, and so on?
Yes, Gilberto. Ford made the announcement that they were exiting the small passenger vehicle segment, and that is related. Let me just give you a little bit of background. If you take a look at, for instance, the consumer preference in the U.S. Mainly, we have seen a big shift in consumer preference. If we go back to 2014, approximately 50% of the total vehicle sales were in the passenger cars and the other 50% were in SUVs and trucks. If we take a look at today's environment, we see that the mix has changed significantly, and now is about 70% SUVs, small SUVs and pickup trucks, and 30% is passenger cars. This is a shift that even some of our customers were not expecting, but that's a reality. We saw FCA make an announcement to exit that segment a couple of years ago, and we are seeing now Ford. So far, Gilberto, we have not seen any effect. And in conversations with top-ranking officials from Ford, what they are telling us, and this has been communicated even at the level of Jim Hackett, is that they are not exiting this market. What they are doing is, according to them, is changing the design of the vehicle, but they like to redesign some of the passenger cars and convert those to small SUVs, which is what the American public prefers now. So far, as I indicated, the announcement was made that they will exit these vehicles by 2020, so we have not experienced any effect. And Ford is confident that they could retain market share with the introduction of these new models or new vehicles that they are at this moment redesigning.
Okay, great. Thank you. And a couple of smaller questions on the results. Just to clarify on the retroactive effect of your agreement with your customers, was there any benefit that you included in the quarter's EBITDA related to the index divergence from the first quarter? And below the operating line, the FX loss was larger than the FX gain that you reported in the first quarter, even though the FX movement was of similar size. Can you explain why that happened?
Yes, Gilberto. To your question about the retroactive effect of the pricing adjustments with our customers, yes, that accounted for the full year, and we booked that on this quarter, the majority. So that takes care of the entire divergence on this quarter. And related to your question about the foreign exchange losses, if you see the effect of the currency, the peso-denominated currency, depreciated close between 8 to 9%. Quarter over quarter. So if you apply that effect into the balance of our debt that is in U.S. currency, since we have a reporting currency in pesos, we need to reflect that adjustment on the value of our debt. The debt that is denominated in U.S. currency is close to between 55 to 58%. So if you apply that exchange rate, you get that corresponding foreign exchange loss in the quarter.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. One moment, please, while we pull for questions. Our next question comes from the line of Travis Piscavi with Hartford Investment Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, and great quarter. Just wanted to get a little more information on the CapEx as percent of sales. It seems like that's coming down. Is that consistent with your launch schedule? And can you kind of give some color around the normalization of CapEx then? And then maybe just if you could make some comments on potential tariffs and maybe how that might play out in the business going forward, given that it's kind of a switch, very quick change. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Travis. Good question. What we are seeing in the industry, especially on the powertrain side of the business, is the following. Customers are not running as they were just a few years ago, reintroducing new engines or new transmissions. What we are seeing is that customers, OEMs today are facing several challenges because the industry is changing fast, and they prefer to invest more in electrification, more in car sharing, as well as vehicle connectivity, autonomous driving, and so on. So we will see the need for less CapEx. Our customers are indicating that they like to maintain the existing powertrains, especially engines and transmissions, longer. They will make small modifications, and that implies, Travis, that we will have to invest less. This year, we're projecting to stay at a level of about 390, and we expect that in the following years, our investments or CapEx for the powertrain business will be significantly reduced. Where we see that we will invest in CapEx, and CapEx is certainly on the new electric and structural business, as well as additional machining, if that makes economic sense. But yes, we have more discipline in terms of CapEx, and we are projecting also to improve our cash flow generation.
Thanks. Yeah, and Travis, related to your second question on the effect of tariffs, I think, yes, we have seen the U.S. very active in terms of trying to push for a couple of tariffs. We saw the aluminum and steel tariffs that they placed triggered by this Section 232 investigation. And I think we have highlighted that in the past, that has no effect on our products. That applies mostly for the raw material side on the aluminum. Plus, our operations in the U.S. are fully reliant on local suppliers. So we have seen no effect on the revenue side, nor we have seen any effect on the cost side, aside from all this volatility that has generated and for which we have discussed divergence and lag. And there is a subsequent 232 investigation related to automobile manufacturing and auto parts. That's an ongoing discussion. There is a lot of people and companies in the U.S. which have opposed such a situation, given the fact that it may have a detrimental effect on their business as well as overall their costs. And what they have highlighted is that in the event that this happens, they will most likely pass on any subsequent effect of cost to the ultimate consumers. So that will apply also to ourselves. We'll essentially pass on any effect if it applies any tariff on our end. So far, we have seen no effect on us.
Great. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Gene Bruni with BBVA. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my questions. Just have one little doubt regarding the backlog. You're just mentioning in your communique like $150 million. Just to clarify, if it's just for the quarter, for the first half of the year, and how much of this is for structural? Thank you very much.
Yeah, the quarter, the $150 million backlog that we highlighted for the quarter, that was primarily the traditional business. We had one project, a very strategic project that Armando shared on his discussion that we had in Europe related to electrical components. But the majority was related to the traditional business on the $150 million that we reported for the quarter.
It's just for the quarter. So it's summing up with the 125 you reported in the first quarter, no?
Yes. So if you add them both together, you have there the 200, close to $260, $70 million of new business.
Super. Yeah. Thanks.
I think it's important to mention that over the last 24 months, we have received approximately about $1.7 billion worth of new business, which about half will be incremental.
Great. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Sanal Sodhi with Morgan Stanley. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Just a question on Europe. So are you seeing any impact in the current quarter and for the fourth quarter? We have heard news around slower ramp-ups due to the new testing norms from some of the OEMs. Are you seeing that impact in your European side?
Yes, that's a good point for now. Certainly in Europe, and I think it's important for us to clarify that issue, they have a new regulation that is put in place effective in September, in which OEMs or customers will need to verify all vehicles with all combinations possible. Let me just give you an example. In the past, if an engine was validated on a typical, let's say, Golf vehicle, that engine could be used also on other models by the Volkswagen Group, just to give you an example. The new regulation in Europe is significantly more strict, and they will require that OEMs validate all configurations. That has created a tremendous backlog in terms of testing. And some of our customers have already announced potentially that they will have to either start or stop production for a few days, or have to warehouse some of the vehicles, which is what we are seeing now. There is some concerns because this new regulation, again, potentially could affect the release of some new vehicles with new configurations. It could be engines or transmissions. Yes, we are already aware of that potential issue. However, so far, we have not seen yet any volume reduction. Certainly, in the event that a volume reduction happens, we will communicate that in the next conference call. Our customers are rushing as fast as possible, trying to get the validation, on, especially on new vehicles with new engines or new transmissions.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sonal.
There are no further questions at this time, and I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Althoff for any additional or concluding remarks. Sir?
Thank you, operator. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a good day.